Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And we're live tonight. This is August the 16th, year 2013. Like I said, I was going to be live all this month before we start out the road again. And it's good to be home for a while. I don't know about the rest of you out there, but we have been having just torrential rains, one after the other. And for the last day or so, it's finally calmed down, so we're not going to have to build the ark after all, I don't think. But Julia is not here tonight. She is still in England. You know, I told you we have an office in England for our publishing company, and we are been moving the office, and she's been over there packing everything because we were down by Marlborough, if anyone knows England. And we are moving to our new office is in Glastonbury. And it's right in the crop circle country. And she said they have a beautiful view of the Tor from one of the windows. So they're right in the middle of some very powerful ancient energy over there. So we might be hearing a lot about that whenever she gets back. But they're in the process now of packing and moving. So she'll be over there for another couple of weeks anyway. So I've just me tonight and my guest. But I do enjoy her being here because then I have someone else to help with the questioning. Well, our guest tonight is another one of our new authors that we have published. And she was also a speaker at the Transformation Conference that we just finished. And we have had so many wonderful speakers at the Transformation Conference. But before we call her on, I want to give out the toll-free number of anyone who wants to call in and ask questions. The toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008. Okay. Now, our guest is Charmian Redwood, and she has written a book about Lemuria. And I know there's always been a lot of interest in that ancient culture. And so she's going to be the guest tonight. Now, Charmian, you're there, aren't you?
I am indeed. Good evening, Dolores. And actually, I moved to America from Glastonbury in 1995.
So you know Glastonbury very well.
I know it very well. I lived there for 5 years. And what I was taken through the veils into what is Avalon. So that whole story of the Grail is centered on Avalon. And I was given the Grail codes and then asked to bring them to America because they said America needs them. So that's how I came to be in America.
I've been to Glastonbury many, many times, and I know it's very old, you know, down by Chalice Well and then the Glastonbury Abbey. All of that is old, and it has that feeling to it of just a very ancient place.
Yeah. Yeah, it has many, many layers. There's the whole Christian story of Joseph of Arimathea and Mother Mary coming there after the crucifixion. And then there's the Druid, the whole Druid history of the... I was actually in a past life one of the trainers in the House of Maidens. I went and found the young girls and then brought them back to Glastonbury to train them as Druid priestesses, so...
Well, you know, I've written two books about Jesus and his connection, and you know, in those days, I wrote Jesus and the Essenes, and they walked with Jesus.
Right.
So I did a lot of research into that area, and a lot of people in England sent me books that you can't find anywhere else. So when I rewrote the Jesus and the Essenes, about 5 or 10 years ago, I added all the new research. So I'm very familiar with Jesus and Joseph of Arimathea's connection in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all in my books. And just a few years ago, too, I was also in the south of France So I'm very familiar with all of that material.
And then there's the whole Arthur and the Knights and Guinevere. That's all centered there as well.
Yes,
you know,
and
Merlin.
I imagine you've been up to the tour.
Yes, I was always going up the tour. That's Archangel Michael energy and the sword energy. And the chalice well is the grail and the chalice energy. And many people in Glastonbury had the vision of the sword coming down into the grail as a symbol for the new age, which is the balancing of the male and the female energies, everything coming into union and oneness.
You know, for those who have not been to England and to Glastonbury, it is outside of the town of Glastonbury is this huge hill. And on the top of it, you can see it from everywhere, all around the area. And on the top of the hill is an ancient tower, and it's called the Tor. And it's very visible, and it's very dramatic looking. And that has been, it's got a path you can go up it, and it's a little arduous. I never could get all the way to the top, Nancy and Julia said. But it's a very narrow, winding path that leads all the way up to the top. And when I first went there, was in 1992, so it's been about 20 years ago, and my publisher told the story of how that whole area used to be underwater, and the Tor was one of the places that was above water. That was where Joseph of Arimathea, they brought the ships in for the tin mining.
That's right.
It all fit in the books that I wrote. It all fit together with the historical research.
Yeah, it's called the Isle of Glass. And it was an island, and the Tor is the name of the hill, and it's actually a labyrinth. It has seven levels, and you walk it going clockwise, then anti-clockwise, round and around. You don't go straight up if you're doing it as a ceremony. So it takes many hours to get to the top, and it was a very ancient Druid site. And then the Christians built St. Michael's Church right on the top. And there was an earthquake, which we don't get in England, and it knocked the church down and just left the tower. So it was kind of reclaiming the site.
In all my research and my writings, I found they did this all over the world. A lot of the ancient sites, the Catholic Church would build things there to try to destroy the ancient energy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but obviously Glastonbury, they didn't succeed because the land fought back and knocked the church down. And so now just the tower is there, and you can see all the way through it, so it's a very wonderful landmark.
Right.
So it's a very magical place, and the veils are very thin there.
Well, that is also the historical place of King Arthur, Avalon, and Camelot.
Yeah. Right.
And so it's a lot of stories there, and I've been there many times, and sometimes other people have gone with me, like with like a tour. They wanted to hear the stories.
Yeah.
So I was really surprised when my daughter and Vitaly, who also works for me, he's my manager over there, found this place in Glastonbury. I said, that's going to be a very tremendous energy to have an office in.
It's a very powerful place, and it's much lighter. It used to be a very heavy, dark energy there because, you know, the Druids, they got into the blood sacrifice, and that was really why they were wiped out, because they had started to do blood sacrifice. So there was some very heavy energy there, but that's mostly cleared now, and it's much lighter than it used to be.
Well, I'll be seeing it when I go over there next, but you can see the hill and the Tor from one of the windows, so that's going to be very interesting.
Yeah.
So you're familiar with that area.
Totally. Yeah, I lived in seven different places. I moved around the different surrounding areas.
But I've been going over there now. It's been over 20 years. I go over at least once a year, sometimes twice.
Yeah. Actually, I think that was the year I moved there, 1991 or 92. so that must have been the same time.
Hmm. Okay, well, we're going to talk about your book now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, well, I know when I brought you over for the conference, you were living in Hawaii, and I thought I was going to have to bring you from Hawaii, but you're in the States now, aren't you?
I'm in Ohio, but this week I'm in Arkansas, so I'm just up the road.
I noticed from the telephone number, you're just right over here in my own backyard.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. But you did live in Hawaii for quite a while, too, didn't you?
I was there for 6 years, yeah.
Hmm. That's why I thought I was going to have to bring you that far.
Mm.
Charmian's book is about Lemuria. And if you remember, Charmian, at the Transformation Conference, we also had Jack Churchward.
Mm.
And we have published his book about his great-grandfather's work. It's very, you know, his great-grandfather was one of the pioneers in the research of, I keep calling it Lemuria. But he said his great-grandfather calls it Mu, and I keep thinking they're the same place, but he says they're two different places. What do you think about that?
No, I think it's the same place, but they didn't call it Lemuria. Later on, people started to call it Lemuria, but at the time, we called ourselves the people of Mu, and it was the continent of Mu. But it was the same civilization, but the Lemuria was a later evolution of it.
That makes sense then with what Jack Churchward has been. He's been bringing back his great-grandfather's work.
Yeah.
And it makes sense.
He was researching more the historical, geographical evidence of the remains that are still on the earth and visible. What I was doing more was taking people back into the memories of the culture and how we worked and how we created things there.
Yeah, well, when Churchward was doing it, you know, he was considered very radical, and they were really criticized because no one believed there could have been a continent out there.
Mm-hmm, right.
He was doing it, you know, by the translation of ancient tablets.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two different ways of doing it.
Yes,
you do it rather the same way I do. You know, I take people back in their past lives to those areas.
And there's been a lot written and uncovered about Atlantis, but very little about Lemuria.
Yes, because Lemuria is older. And a lot of people have written me saying which came first and all of that.
Uh-huh.
But let me say a few things, and then you can go over there. But what I have learned anyway is Lemuria was first, and it was centered in the Pacific,
mm-hmm.
where Atlantis was in the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference in the two. But they were actually very ancient continents. But Lemuria was there before the Atlantean culture.
Yeah, that's right. So the Lemuria was really the first civilization that we came to on the Earth, and we were not in three-dimensional bodies then. We were in fifth-dimensional light bodies, so we could just flow wherever we wanted to go, and we could be any size or shape that we wanted to be.
And we were not solid.
No.
We were not solid at that time.
Mm-mm. No, and this was before the fall. Before we went into that whole cycle of separation and duality. So everything was oneness, and there was only love. We didn't know what conflict was. We had no concept of division or separation, just oneness, service, and love. So that's the time that we now call the Garden of Eden, that was paradise upon the earth.
But, you know, before we get too much into this, let's let people know about you, your background, and how you discovered all this information. Tell us about you first.
Do you mean how I got the information about Lemuria?
Your background.
Well, my background was I was a very normal person in England until I was 30. I was a school teacher. I was buying a house, having nice long holidays, and going to the pub and playing darts a lot, as we do over there. And then when I was 29, I had a near-death experience, which completely changed my life. So I count my life really as starting when I had that experience.
Tell us about the experience. I'm always interested in near-death experiences.
Okay, well, it was I was in the hospital, and I had given birth to twins. I had my two babies, and the whole experience of the birth was mishandled by various departments in the hospital, and I ended up with blood poisoning. So I was taken back to the hospital after 10 days, and I was dying. And I really didn't care if I lived or died. I was so ill. I had no really will to struggle and try and stay here. I just was quite happy to leave. So the first night that I was in the hospital, I experienced myself just lifting up out of the body that stayed down in the bed, but I wasn't in it anymore. I was just floating up into this really beautiful golden light. And as soon as I got there, I knew this is home, this is real, everything I need is in this light, and it's where I want to be. And everything that is down there, where I had been, is just a story that I'm playing out. So there was no fear at all in leaving the body. I just knew I was going into love and peace, and the angels were there, and I had no fear at all. And then in the golden light, Jesus appeared in front of me, and I just knew it was him. We had this whole telepathic conversation, and he was this really beautiful being made of white light and this blue star in his heart. And when I was standing before him, I felt something I have never experienced in my life before or really since, was just unconditional acceptance, love, and non-judgment. No matter how much I might be judging myself, there was nothing coming from him that was of, you are a bad person or you did this wrong. So he said to me in my head, because your heart is pure, if you want to, you can stay with us in the golden light. But we're asking you to go back because the world needs your love, your wisdom, and your healing. So I said, how can I go back down there knowing that this is where I belong with you? And his response was, he took a piece of his star, a point of his star, he took it off, and he put it into my heart. And he said, now you will know that I am always with you. So the next minute, I'm floating over that body in the bed, knowing that if I get back into that, I will take on suffering, and this body is not who I am. If I stay out here, I will never suffer again. But I just given birth to my two babies, and there was no way I was going to leave them without a mother. So I came back into the body, and then everything that I had done in my life, the career, the teaching, was utterly meaningless. My education, utterly meaningless. And I just wanted to be back. I wanted to find a way to go back to that golden light and live in that place. So at that point, I just gave my life to God and said, whatever you need me to do, just let me know and I'll do it. I probably didn't know what I was letting myself in for.
Oh, we never do.
I've been traveling for 30 years and I've probably lived in 70 places. But that's just how I live my life now. Wherever I'm needed, that's where I go. So I came to the end of my time in Hawaii, and they said I'd received all the light codes from Hawaii, from Lemuria. now bring them back to the mainland because this is where they're needed. So I found myself living in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I didn't even know where that was. I had to look on the map to find it.
Well, you that was just this year, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I left Hawaii in October, and I spent 5 months flying around and driving around doing workshops all over the place. And then I moved to Ohio in end of February.
So, well, you might be sorry once you find out how cold it's going to be up there in the winter.
I know. I just got the tail end of the snow. But yeah, they're very warm people there. They're very loving and very heart-open people. So I really love being there.
Quite a difference from Hawaii.
Well, the thing is, Hawaii has a lot of very conscious people who are very evolved. So, you know, they don't really need what I have to give so much. Whereas in Cincinnati, people are really waking up incredibly quickly, and they're very hungry. They want what I do now is I take people between the worlds to experience the other dimensions. I do it through channeling and I do it through hypnosis. And there's really nobody doing what I do in Cincinnati, and people are just ready for something different, you know, because the old life, the way we've been living on this planet, isn't working for them anymore, and they want something more authentic. And so I've been really welcomed there with open hearts, and it's very nice.
I'm finding this everywhere I go. See, as we keep saying, the veil is thinning, because everybody is beginning to wake up.
Yeah.
And I'm noticing it everywhere, especially since, December the 21st. It seems like everybody keeps saying there hasn't been any changes. They don't notice any changes, but there is. And a lot of people in my audiences have said that. They said, we know something is happening. They can feel it, that there is definitely changes going on.
Yeah.
And we are evolving. We're evolving very fast.
And everybody is having personal changes in their personal life, and that is the shift. I do a circle every week in Cincinnati with my crystal bowls and channeling, and since I started in March, over half of the people in the circle have either lost their jobs, quit their jobs, or just wanted to do something different. Or their relationships are finished, their 30-year-old marriages are finished, or something really drastic has happened in their lives. One of them, his son was killed in a car crash recently. And these are the events, even on the personal level, that are shifting us into being our authentic selves and to doing what we came to do. Because we don't have time anymore to just mark time doing something that our soul is really not thrilled about.
But that's what happens with my clients. They come to see me. They're looking for purpose. They want to know why they're here.
Yeah.
Many of them have been caught up in the world, and they're not happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are caught in jobs that they don't like, and they want. They want to change, and of course they know their changes. If they go in a different direction, they're not going to be the money there. It's going to be different, but they all feel they have to be doing something else, that their time is running out. They can't be caught in this rat race anymore.
Right.
So I'm hearing this a lot from my clients, too.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the world will change when we change. So it's an individual process first, and then it becomes a global movement kind of thing.
Well, that's why we call it, the 100th monkey syndrome.
Yes, that's right.
Hopefully it will affect everyone. Mm-hmm. Of course, we still get some letters from people that say, nothing is happening. I don't know what you mean. It's still an awful world. Well, that's their world. It's not the world that I live in. And it's not the world that you live in either.
People expect the whole world to shift overnight, and it's a process. The energy has shifted, and all of those conflict situations, they will resolve and they will leave the planet. But for some people, their way to finding peace, they have chosen to do it through conflict, to realize that this is not the way. We need to do it differently. We need to reach out to our enemies and call them brothers. Some people are still in that process, so they're going to have to just play that out to the end. But the rest of us don't need to do that. We can start creating heaven on earth right now, just in our own community.
Well, everyone is at a different stage of their development. Mm-hmm. We can't all of us shift at the same time. They all have to take their steps. Mm-hmm. And that has to do with the vibration and the frequency of their own soul.
Yeah.
So if they're ready or if they're not. So some are moving faster than others. Eventually we're going to all get there. It just won't all be at the same time.
No.
But so everyone, if they're on the path, and if they're not, that's okay. I've been told they will get there eventually anyway. It's just some faster than others.
Mm-hmm.
Did you start getting the information about Lemuria when you were in Hawaii, or was it?
Yes, when I went to Hawaii, I had heard the word before I went, and I knew I was a Lemurian, but I didn't mean anything to me because I knew nothing at all about Lemuria. And when I was even flying for the first time from L.A. to the Big Island, Kona, I just started crying halfway across because I knew I was coming home. And I'd always thought of Glastonbury as my spiritual home. But when I got to Hawaii and I stepped out of the plane and I stepped onto that land, I just felt safe for the first time in my life. And then within a week, I met this whole group of people. There was an ET conference the first weekend that I was there, and I thought, I'm going to meet my family there. So I went, and I did. And I started doing hypnosis sessions with them, and all of them were going back to Lemuria. And I didn't plan that. It just came up in every single one of the sessions. So that's when I realized that I'd been brought back so that I could have those memories and to bring them back now.
But to me, the Big Island is new land. And you probably found the old land. It's Kauai.
Yes, the most authentic and the clearest Lemurian energy is Kauai, especially the Kalalau Valley, where there was an ancient Lemurian temple. But also I found many crystal cities off the coast that are now under the water. The first one I found was on the Big Island between Kealakekua and Honaunau in the ocean. And it's where the dolphins swim. It's where Joan Ocean takes her dolphin retreats. Wherever the dolphins are, that's where the Lemurian crystal cities are. So
well,
they were all over the island.
Hawaii is the oldest part of the Hawaiian chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Yeah, and it's still very clear. The energy is very pure there. But Maui has crystal cities too. So the reason that the Lemurian memories are coming back now at this time on the planet is that in Lemuria, before the fall, we lived in oneness. We lived from the heart. We were telepathic. We could travel anywhere that we wanted to just by intention. And we just lived in service. We lived to serve. And now the energy of the planet, we've come through separation. We've come through the fall. The planet is returning to oneness. And because we all have the Lemurian memories in our genetic makeup, we know how to do oneness because we've done it before. So those Lemurian aspects are being reintegrated into our multidimensional bodies to help us to make this shift that we're doing now since December 2012, where we are returning to our awakened, fully self-realized conscious beings.
That's what I've learned in my work, too, that when we didn't come to this planet, we were light beings, and mm-hmm. the body's not solid. And after being here for quite a while, then it began to solidify.
Mm-hmm.
And was eventually, it did lead to the fall of Lemuria, just like the fall of Atlantis.
But well, we actually chose to do the separation, what we call the fall, which was before the destruction. But we had only lived in light and oneness and beauty and grace and truth. And as a way of soul evolution, as a great challenge to give ourselves that would help us exponentially to grow as a soul, we chose to go into separation, to forget that we were creator gods, to play out the parts of victim and do all the martyrdom and the sacrifice and to experience suffering, but then to bring it all back to the oneness. So now we have the power of the light and the dark, which is more powerful than if we'd only ever known the light. So from the darkness, we are choosing to come back to the light of our own free will, and that's where the power is. So that's why it's so important that these memories are coming back now.
But this is a planet of free will.
It's
also
is.
A planet of duality, so we do have the light and the dark. We always have opposites
yeah.
on this planet.
Yeah.
That's what's different than other planets. They have other rules and regulations, but
mm-hmm.
we have free will, so we do have the ability to choose here. And I think that's important.
And what we're doing now is bringing them both together, not banishing the darkness, but bringing it into the light so that it becomes a synthesis of the two and the point of reconciliation in the center.
Well, in the work that you have done, did you find, was there any one incident or that caused the fall of Lemuria, or was it...
it was a choice that we asked to be disconnected. We asked to have our... DNA strands disconnected because we wanted to experience helplessness, powerlessness, and to go through that whole experience of duality, separation, forgetting that we are powerful co-creator gods and goddesses, and we fell into ego. So it was like a group soul choice, and then the Anunnaki came in and shut us down and did the disconnection, but we had asked for it and asked to do it.
I mean, was there an earthquake or flooding? How did the whole continent go down?
Oh, the continent, yes. That was after the fall. There was a war. This is what I've remembered. There was a war between Atlantis and Lemuria. The Atlanteans had gone off on a path where they had really gone on to the, got away from the heart and the law of one and the concept of wholeness and oneness, and we are all one. And they got really drunk with power and became very destructive. So they developed these weapons very much like the ones that we have now, and they blew up first Lemuria and then Atlantis by abusing the power that they were given. So that was why it was destroyed.
I've written about the same things. But Lemuria was, it was in the Pacific. What I've heard is that there are the remnants. See if you have the same information. Hawaiian Islands are part of it. Japan. And let me see. It goes all the way around.
Yeah, like all the Pacific Islands and the west coast of America. So Peru and those Chile, those the countries on the west coast. You know, when the Incas got to Machu Picchu, they said the temples were already there, those huge stone blocks. So that's all Lemurian. And then New Zealand and Australia, they were part of Lemuria too.
So I was thinking it's like a circle. They call that the Ring of Fire.
That's
but
right.
That's all around
the Pacific.
Surrounding the Pacific Ocean was where the remnants are of Lemuria. And it all went down in the middle.
Yeah, that's right. And they had the technology to, they used light and sound to cut those huge stone blocks and then to float them into position. So it wasn't hundreds of people with ropes and pulleys and all that kind of stuff.
I know. Now, I've written about all of that, too, and so that's why I know that it wasn't done that way. The same way in England, it wasn't done that way.
I think it was in maybe the other book on Lemuria by Childress, that the on Easter Island, those statues, the local people say that they walked to the positions that they were on now. And that was the nearest they could come to saying that they were floated there.
Because I've written a lot about how the levitation, and a lot of it was done with sound. Well, I'm thinking of, they were talking about Egypt and the ones, even the way the Temple of Jerusalem was built, that it was all done with sound.
Yeah, and the Tibetans still know how to do that. They still have that technology. And all of this will come back, because a lot of my sessions that I do, especially with the men, they have the knowledge. They were the ones who built the pyramids and who used the levitation to float the stone. So we have encoded within us these memories, and when the frequency has reached the right energy on the earth, these memories will come back, and we will be doing it again using anti-gravity and using our own electromagnetic field to propel vehicles and craft, that kind of thing.
Yeah, because we do have those abilities. And I think it was in one of my books, they talked about many, many civilizations that have gone down, some of them even older. And that they said afterwards, because we misused the power, people got into greed, that they, in one of them it said that it's like blowing a fuse. And they were never allowed to use that again, because they said they misused it. So it was like blowing a fuse, and it was going to have to go back. They lost a lot of abilities, because it was going to take a long time to get those abilities back.
Yes, and many of the temples that we worked in, when we knew that the end was coming, we shut down the temples. This happened with the Cathars. One of my memories is being in Montsegur when the Cathars were being put to death. So we closed down all of our portals in Lemuria, in Atlantis, so that the energy could not be misused through the time of separation. And what's happening now, a lot of my work and Drumvalo, Melchizedek, people like that, traveling around the earth to these power places and reactivating the temples and bringing the flame back to places where it hasn't been for a long time.
Well, it's been many years, and some of it is dormant, but we are trying to awaken it, because it was only, I guess, 2 years ago now, I took some people on a tour in England, and we were in Stonehenge, and in one of my books it talked about there was a portal in the center of Stonehenge that you could go back and forth through time.
Yeah.
And we were there with Maria Wheatley, who was one of the, she's into...
Dowsing.
you want to call witching. It's a divination.
The ley lines,
yeah. Her father was one of the pioneers of doing that over there, and we published his book. But she was there, and she was using the divining rods, and she walked across the center. She said, yes, you can still feel it. It's very weak, but it is still there.
Yes, so, I've seen, I was there once with my friend, and this ship came down like a six-pointed star, and it had six beings on it, and they were from Sirius, and they had been part of the group that guided the setting of the stones, or the placement of the stones when it was being built, and they'd left because of all of the sacrifice that was going on there. There was a lot of blood. I used to, even when I drove past Stonehenge, I couldn't even look at it for many years because I just felt the pain. But that's all been cleared now, and so that star alignment has been reactivated. And there's a lot of blue fire going up the stones.
Well, the story I got was that it was back before all that happened, and it was being used for ceremonies, and they did use the portal to go back and forth.
Right. Yeah.
This is before the conquerors came in then and killed them, and it did contaminate the area of Stonehenge.
I've seen the same thing in Egypt, in the pyramids at Giza, and I've seen it in Chaco Canyon, the Kiva there in New Mexico or Arizona, that we used sound. And we created dimensional travel light ships in these places, and then we used them to travel between the worlds, between the planes, and between the stars. And this, again, is knowledge that we have within us that is encoded, and this is all being reactivated now.
I know some of my clients, you know, like I said, they come wanting to know their purpose, wanting to know what they're here for, and many of them feel that they need to be working with sound and colors, too. Colors.
Yeah.
And I tell them this was what was used at Atlantis, and it's being reawakened. They're probably awakening their own memories. And many people are starting to use colors and sound again for healing.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
The memories are there. They're just coming back.
Yeah, crystal light and sound was how we used to travel. It's what powered our vehicles. We used it for healing, and we used it for free energy, and all of that technology is there, and that will be brought to the surface as well. But
I've written a lot about Atlantis and how they used the crystals.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Right here in where we are in Arkansas, well, where I am, over to the east of where you're at right now, this whole area has crystals all underneath the ground.
Mm-hmm. That's actually why I came back this week, because I didn't have time to do it after the conference. But there's a group of us going to activate one of the Atlantean crystals that was transported from Atlantis before Atlantis went down. It was a huge generator crystal, and it's going to be activated. We're going to do that next week. And there's new grid being created, a new power grid being created.
Well, there's, you know, to the south of here is where they have the crystal mines.
Yeah.
And everybody likes to go because, it's, you know, you go in, and anybody's allowed to go in, and you just pick crystals up off the ground.
No, I'm going to do
that. And the whole area, they said all the crystals in the world come from Arkansas and Brazil. So people don't realize what we're sitting on here. And I know we were told in one of our sessions, they said, you just think you chose to come there.
Yeah.
You didn't realize you're sitting on top of all these crystals and the powerful energy.
Well, I was doing a session yesterday with a lady who, she remembered leaving Atlantis when it was sinking, taking emerald tablets, and she took them to Egypt. And I said, will the information be given again? And she said, not until people, will we find those tablets? She said, not until our consciousness has lifted enough that we won't use it for destruction. And then I said, is there a point where we come into that consciousness as a race, as a group? And she said, when the crystals start to sing again. So it's an activation of the crystal grid that will trigger this next mass ascension process.
Well, see, I live on top of one of these mountains, and see, imagine we had all that energy right underneath us.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, that's why we're called back here, because we are the Atlanteans who worked with that grid, and it was a global grid, and it was used to generate power, and we need to be using the technology again, but not to create mass destruction weapons. That was
no, but it's always, that's what I say in my lectures, it always gets to the point where they have everything, but it's never enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually the men, and I'm always sorry to say that, but it is the men who get greedy and want power, and then they start to misuse the power that's there, and that's what caused the destruction.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a similar session. It's in one of my books where these people were there, and they were the keepers of the knowledge and the scrolls in Atlantis. And whenever it, right before it was going down, they were able to escape in a boat, and they ended up in Egypt with what they could carry.
Mm-hmm.
And they said they helped with the building of the pyramids. And they said a lot of the information they have, the scrolls and the crystals, whatever they brought with them, is inside the walls in the pyramid. But it can never be found only by certain people, because there's like a, a magnetic field that covers it, and it'll be invisible to anyone unless they're the right vibration to be allowed to find this knowledge again.
Yeah. Yeah, we all have different keys to unlock certain frequencies. And what the crop circles are, they are visual keys that will help us to unlock these DNA codes that we carry inside. So they're all meant for certain groups of people, that each one is a key, and it activates certain DNA codes for certain people. So you only need to see a picture of the crop circle. You don't have to go there.
I was going to say that. Trigger. I tell that in my lectures, too. You don't have to actually be in the circle.
No, you just
it's
see
what
the picture.
Does it.
It's
the
whole,
symbol.
It's an unconscious thing, but it goes inside, goes in through the eyes, and then it activates the DNA codes.
If they told me it goes in on a cellular level, and it's actually giving information on a cellular level.
That's right, yeah.
So it is just by seeing the symbol, and it is an actual, it's a language, it's a message that goes in.
Yes, it is. It's the language of light, which we knew in Lemuria. One of the parts in my book is about how we worked in the crystal temples, in the crystal cities, and there was a huge antenna, crystalline antenna, that pointed up. And when the sun was directly overhead, this golden beam would come down. And in that beam, there were all the creation codes for creating whatever anybody wanted to focus on. So we would stand in our temple teams, which was usually 12, and we would have a blueprint, an idea of what we wanted to create. And then different people would extract from the creation codes. Some would get the sounds, some would get the geometry, others would get the picture. And then we would all make the sounds, visualize the picture together. And then we would literally manifest on the physical plane whatever we were focusing on. So we were using that language of light and those creation codes. And this is what we're going to be doing again. That's why we're remembering these old ways, because we're coming to the place where the frequency of the earth will support us to do this instant manifestation. So all the teams are coming back together and finding each other and being called through the power places that they can be doing this on.
That's what I've been told, that it is time to reactivate all of this.
Yeah.
I always like it when I find other people getting similar information. Because a lot of time, I've been doing this work for 45 years, and sometimes I feel like I'm out there all by myself. But
yeah,
I keep,
you are the pioneer.
What?
You are the pioneer.
But I kept thinking, you know, I'm out there all by myself, but I keep finding other people getting the same information. I like that. It's validation.
Yes, it is.
So that it is real information. Otherwise, why would so many people now be getting the same thing? And it is coming back. Okay. You would be surprised. We are almost out of time. We've already talked almost an hour. The time flies. But Charmian Redwood, the name of her book is Coming Home to Lemuria. And, of course, you can get the book in the bookstores, Amazon, or on our website. Our website is Ozark Mountain Publishing is the name of the company, so the website is abbreviated. It's OZARKMT.com. Or if you're overseas, it's OZARKMT.com. But Charmian, tell people how they can get a hold of you if they want to.
Well, I have my website, which is very conveniently called ComingHomeToLemuria.com. It's all one word, Coming Home to Lemuria. And I do all kinds of activations of the DNA, the light bodies, the galactic brain, releasing all things that we've been carrying from the past. And I have lots of CDs and my books on there. So I do sessions on the phone or Skype or in person. So you can find me there. Coming Home
you
to
do, Lemuria. Do you speak at lectures or for groups?
Oh, yes, and I do. I play crystal bowls. I have the sound codes. My work is really with the sound codes. So I play the crystal bowls, and I do lectures, expos, conferences. And then I also channel. I do a lot of channeling of the masters and help people to connect with their soul lineage, who they have been when they've been powerful and much more conscious than we are now.
Yeah, we are. But so if anyone wants to get a hold of you, it just even to communicate with you, or if they want you to speak somewhere, if they just want to talk or find out about your book, they can get a hold of you with your website, ComingHomeToLemuria.com.
And I have my email address on there, and I have a YouTube channel with lots of my channelings on it.
Good then. So that's Charmian Redwood. So I think you'll be able to find her then. Well, we're coming down to the time, and I want to thank you for coming on tonight.
Well, thank you very much. I'm sorry we didn't have time to answer anybody's questions, but they can always email me. I love to connect people.
If they had a question, they would have been sent through, because Don, he puts them through, but they've told me before that we don't want to ask questions. We just want to listen.
Okay.
So they've been listening out there.
Yeah,
so if
they
have questions, they can contact you, and you will communicate with them.
Yes, I will do, yes. And thank you very much, Dolores. I'm very honored to be on your show. Thank you very much.
Okay, so now it's time to leave. So I want to thank everyone for listening tonight, and I'll be back live again next week. So thank you, everyone, and good night, everybody.